thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Actually,
here's John Williams.
Carrying some over from yesterday. Hi, it's John. We are in the downtown Skyline Studio, 18 stories above a pretty city.
Lord have mercy.
And the summer's last hurrah is on its way. We're here today until 3. Weekdays 1 to 3, it's the John Williams Show. Saturday mornings in the same studios from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m., and that's a pretty swell show, too. So thanks for joining us. Remember, you can always be part of the program. Same as with Bill and Wendy and the rest of the gang. Call or text 312-981-7200. Go to WGNradio.com/Teddy to find out about our upcoming October 12th, right, Producer Elif? October 12th, she's nodding her head. 10:30 in the morning, visit with President Teddy Roosevelt. It's really going to be fun. It's really going to be funny. If you've not been to one of these things, you will be amazed because this guy is believable. He's the same guy that does our Jefferson show. Two more different presidents you wouldn't have. But I only bring up Jefferson to remind you that when Ken Burns did his documentary about Jefferson, this is the guy he used. He's one of America's great presidential scholars, but he brings these guys to life. So he walks onto stage with me, and I chat with him for a little bit, and then you ask questions. And maybe you don't know Roosevelt as well as you know Lincoln or a current president or who else is popular, Jefferson. But Roosevelt is as amazing, literally as amazing a president as we've ever produced, as amazing a statesman as we've ever produced. And it's just always, I think, good to go back a little bit in history to our roots as a country and say, okay, so what was that? What does that mean? What is that like? And he bounds onto stage, and he and I chat, and you ask questions about everything, right? Busting trusts, charging up San Juan Hill, being a cowboy, being the police commissioner of New York and how he cleaned that up. But I don't know, that doesn't seem so relevant, does it? His personal stories are really amazing, too. I mean, he wanted to fight in the war and was disappointed that he didn't come back from the war with Cuba with a quote-unquote disfiguring scar. He insisted that his sons fight and lost some of them in battle. It just goes on and on and on. But maybe most interesting of all will be his reflections on, or your reflections on, the difference between how the country was run then and how it's run now. That's not a shot at Donald Trump per se. It might be a little bit, but we'll see what happens. You get to ask the questions. So get your tickets. Go to WGNradio.com/Teddy for our October 12th visit with President Theodore Roosevelt. It'll be at the Elgin Community College. They have a beautiful Blizzard Theater. These community colleges in the area really have top-notch facilities with dynamite staffs. We were only treated with excellence at the College of DuPage, at the Shakespeare Theater, at the auditorium at Northwestern. Wherever we go, and the community colleges included, we just get the best treatment and best service. You're going to really have a nice time. Good price on the tickets, too. I think they're $150 each. I'm kidding. They're a lot less than that. I think it'll cost you $30. Money well spent. Come see the show. Come see the show. Okay, it's 1:11. Before we get to a couple of things, I want to talk. We will catch you up on what's happening at the White House today, what's happening with the president. You know, it's we could do this every day. I try not to do it too much. But I will just mention this in passing now, and then we'll talk more about it later on. There's a website called theweeklylist.org, theweeklylist.org, which is a compilation of the things that, as the site says, details how democracy dies. And this week, theweeklylist.org for this week has an astonishing 179 entries, 179 points to ponder for the week. If you don't laugh, you'll just cry. So we'll go over that a little later on. But let's just go back to a couple local things we talked about yesterday first. People are still muttering about the buttons on the L for women who are expecting. Can I just share with you a few tweets and texts that we didn't get a chance to read yesterday? 630, what price did we pay for these buttons and to whom? The CTA is like a, you know, $87 billion organization. They cranked out some buttons. It's not, that's not the issue. But whenever something comes up, people always say, and who, how much did those cost?
Even if so, probably not a lot. Buttons are pretty cheap.
Right. And if I don't know, I'm not going to find out for you. But if I did, I'll bet it would be like 42 cents to somebody who probably knows a guy. It's probably ugly, but it's still just like 42 cents. It's probably not even 42 cents. John, give up a seat for a pregnant woman is just the right thing to do. The problem is that folks will abuse it. Many may not be pregnant.
I think there should be a filter on these texts, whether or not, or if they've ridden the CT in the past 22 years.
Why do you say that?
Because I bet most of the people commenting on it haven't ridden the CTA.
You think that's not a relevant point, that some people might abuse it?
Well, I mean, I think if you're not going to be put out by it, I don't know that you
should. Why do you care?
Right.
Why should we worry about your opinion? Like the folks that use a handicapped hang tag that are not handicapped, but they're just lazy. Does that really happen? Do people really abuse the handicapped parking spaces?
I don't think they're that easy to get.
And whenever I go to Target or Home Depot, it seems to me the Jewel, there's usually handicapped spots available up front. Some people may abuse it, but if you are a person, boy, I'm going to get it now.
No, I'll take the heat off you. Go ahead with what I say next. Go ahead.
If you are if you're a person with a handicap tag, I'll bet you very, very, very rarely are denied a space up front. Steve Bertrand, go.
I think there are too many handicapped spots.
Oh, my. He just trumped me.
I will say, though, I know someone that had a handicap tag when we were in high school. She was a classmate of mine. And you would never guess by looking at her, but she had like a blood disorder that made her extremely weak. So it was more of a fatigue thing and the wear and tear on her body and on her joints.
Just no, I mean, I'm all for them. I don't mean that. But if would think of it, when you go by most stores, there are four, five, or six
definitely.
Open.
I agree. But I'm just in the terms of people who think that they see people with tags that
abusing
don't deserve
it,
you really don't know what's going on.
Did she get some heat sometimes from people or some cross looks?
I'm sure she did. I think she mentioned once that someone was giving her a dirty look getting out of her
car. One of my favorite things is at my Whole Foods, there are two perfect parking spots side by side, right, and you can almost touch the store from them. One is handicapped and the other is not. And once a week or month, you might get that one that's not. I just liked it when people yell at me for taking a handicap spot. Show me the sign, sir.
You know, if I were your friend, Lauren, or Steve, if I were parking in that legitimate spot, I still think when I got out of my car, I'd limp.
No, but you shouldn't have to do that.
More texts about this story. John, 2 days before my son was born, I rode the L from Washington to Cumberland, and no one gave me a seat. This may be the funniest and truest of the texts that we got on this topic yesterday. 847, I bet if I gave everyone a trophy who stood up for every pregnant woman would have a seat. Maybe you catch more flies with honey. John, you try being pregnant and then tell us that we aren't entitled to a seat. I don't think I said that you weren't. John, I held a door open for a woman one day, and if looks could kill, I would be dead. Some people don't like that. I'm not saying this is easy to navigate terrain these days, but those are just some of the texts that have poured in over the last 24 hours on this topic. There's also the story of seatbelts on school buses. Tammy Duckworth and I believe, Tennessee Republican congressman have pushed forward legislation that would mandate the three-point seatbelts for every child on every school bus. You talk about good ideas that maybe aren't so good after all. The cost per bus is going to be around $10,000. And to retrofit old buses, that would be for the production of new ones, $10,000 for seatbelts for all those kids. And if you want to put it on old buses the kids are riding that don't have them, it would be even more than $10,000 a seat. So is that all that good an idea? Since children are injured or killed virtually never on school bus accidents, on school buses. Steve, there was a terrible school bus accident. Was it today?
Yeah, I sent you the story. I think it was in Mississippi or Alabama.
Yes, Mississippi.
And it looks like the bus driver had, they're calling a medical emergency. I don't know if seizure or heart attack, and rolled the bus over onto its side. The bus driver died. And six or seven kids were injured. Typically, they're not injured badly, but I think a few were transported by helicopter in this case.
Yeah, I saw two.
Maybe if they were buckled in, they would not have been tossed about and not injured. So that is the kind of exception to the rule that puts these stories forward. And maybe you agree that we should spend the money. And I know somebody recently on a school board, and she said, boy, this is a lot harder than I thought. Maybe school boards should spend the money to retrofit the buses in case something like that happens. But it's just a matter of dollars and cents, isn't it? I mean, we should do a lot of things, and at some point you have to make a decision. John, on buses, they worry about the children playing with the seatbelts and hurting other students, said somebody else. Line one on this topic, says producer Elif. Hey, Therese, you're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Good. How are you, John?
What's on your mind?
You and I have spoken many times about MS, and I'm the young lady that did all the experimental drugs.
Oh, yeah.
And when I hear these discussions about handicap, I'm with you on that there are a ton of them, Mr. Bertrand. And if you come upon it, and you need to go in and do your shopping, then you're not going to because, like, oh, there's four, so I'll just take one, those of us that are, you know, those that are not without a disability. So I appreciate both sides of the coin, seeing as I didn't get MS until I was 50. But please understand that until we get people stopped using them as a person that is not disabled, and then those of us that are disabled are not able to use them, it'd be different if there were just six parking places in the parking lot.
Right.
And we have a whole parking lot open, and it's better for your health to walk anyway. I would prefer to be able to do that.
Yeah, you know, I know you would, and that's an interesting point. We would all be better off, actually, if we walked a little further. What's the matter, Steve?
No, I think that's a good point, too. And to be honest with you, I don't mind. I'm not saying it because I mind the walk. I don't mind the walk. I hate people who wait for a spot that's four spots closer. Just, you know, go out and park
right.
And walk. But I
right.
just think that when you do go by most stores, there are usually a lot of empty ones.
They have to put so many handicaps per the amount of people that visit their stores.
Yeah.
When the law was passed, that's what happened.
Yeah, and I just think
so
maybe the law...
you see so many more.
Right, so maybe the law needs to be revisited, or maybe I'm wrong and that it's hard to find a spot sometime.
I'm thinking more the latter. Hey, by the way, how are you doing, Therese?
I'm doing awesome. I'm on the new Oak Crevice, and I am out, and I'm swimming now, and life is good. And the only reason I ever use it is at the end of the day. Some of us with MS don't look like we have MS. But by the end of your day, if you go into a store and just do a minimal amount of shopping, when you come back, you can barely make it to the car.
Isn't that amazing?
Standardly, at that time, it's my, you know, husband that will bring me.
But
that's what I'm trying to say. You know, I get you guys. I was there, but... it's so difficult. Some people have to have two handicapped spaces, the larger ones I'm sure you've seen, because they have to enter from the side of their van.
So wow.
Yeah, I think it's really dangerous to ever assume someone getting out of a handicapped placard car doesn't deserve it.
How is it harming you anyway?
Wrong.
I know, but I mean, how is it hurting? If unless you see somebody who, I don't know, you know that they're not handicapped and they're abusing the system and they're denying somebody else's spot, I guess you should come up to them and confront them, but I don't know. I try and grab life by the smooth handle. Thomas Jefferson told me to do that. I'm looking for less conflict than more. Hey, by the way, Therese, before you go, are you still there?
Yes.
So,
yes, I am.
Just refresh our memory. You have multiple sclerosis, and it's debilitating. You were part of an experimental protocol, and the drug that you were taking was really doing well for you. And as I understand you to say now, it continues to do well for you, and only late in the day are you most fatigued. Is that the best case scenario? It's not going to cure it, but it's going to enable you to live. Does it extend the life, or what's the prognosis on this new drug?
This new drug is slowing down the progression of the disease in the brain. It is also helping to stop the demyelinization, not in totality. It attacks the T and B cells in your immune system, and that's as far as I'll go. And the point is that you don't have the side effects. The bad part about MS drugs is there's always some side effect, which will affect you. Now, you guys saying you'd rather take the smooth side, as Mr. Jefferson said, and you said, Mr. Bertrand, you'd rather walk, those two things reduce stress. And in our world, there's so much stress that this is how you contact autoimmune diseases, you know, maybe ignite your cancer cells that are living in your body. So the more you reduce stress, the better off you are. So
stay well and call again, Therese.
Okay, take care. I love you guys' show. And Mr. Bertrand, I love your noon show. It helps me learn so much. So So thank you again.
You think you learn more on my show than John's?
Don't even start on that.
Well, now that's kind of hard, Mr. Pretend, because it is a tie. So
goodbye, Therese.
Take care. Bye.
She's a nice lady. We appreciate her listening. And yours, too. By the way, 773 said, it is very easy to get the handicapped placard. Anyone who has suffered a broken ankle or broken leg, arthritis, anyone with a family member who's... Wait a minute.
Well, that's
not easy. I know. So as to save myself 20 paces walking into the grocery store, all I got to do is snap a femur and we're good to go. Several of you texted in yesterday and said, John, I went to the Amazon website. There are not 30,000 openings. John, that event, which is going to be at Vertiport, 1339 South Wood, is a helicopter tour company. Yes, I believe that is where they do the helicopter tours. There's a place there, 1339 South Wood in Chicago, on September 17th. For most of the day, they're going to have this job fair where they tell you about the jobs that are already posted. But some of you said you couldn't find the jobs. Producer Elif, how many jobs in Illinois are on the Amazon site, please?
231, John.
Okay, well, now I'm really disappointed because she made it sound like there was more than that.
Did I stutter?
No, you did not. Don't be mad at me. Hello, John Williams. Please ask Steve Bertrand to discuss his trip to the Ashnala Supper Club this past weekend. My wife and I are planning a trip there next weekend. John, Steve doesn't like your triangulation talent when you guess weather temperatures because he can't do it himself. Keep up the fine work.
It's not a talent.
What was the best thing about the Ashnala Supper Club?
The whole event of it all. Yeah. It's a happening.
It is.
Wally used to say that. It's a happening. And, you know, food was great. The cocktails were fun. It was a great place. We're already planning on going back next year.
And that's what we said, and then we didn't do it. But it's easy to maybe overstate it. It's near this clear lake that isn't all that clear, but it's beautiful. And you're overlooking this small lake area that has too much algae. And it's got a round bar. And I swear to God, the Drapers are going to walk in at any second there and have a Manhattan with you or an old fashioned.
Right, right.
And you get supper club food. And I think the fun of it, too, partly is just the going there and anticipating it and doing it.
Well, that's the thing. It's the night of it.
Yes.
You know, it's the whole, it's not any one singular thing.
Right. You can get prime rib in Chicago, but it feels special. It really is fun. The Ashnala Supper Club closes, I think, the 1st of October. This is not a commercial for them. This is us just telling you about one of our sponsors, and all of that stuff is true. Hey, Charlie, I'm short of time, but you're a village inspector, or at least you were. Is that right?
What's that?
You were a village inspector. I don't have a lot of time, yeah. But what did you want to say, Charlie?
Well, a lot of things. I mean, I guess I can't spell it out, you know, that faster, but it's a really complicated subject, and the code that it's most everybody has to follow in Illinois is the 1997 accessibility code, and it's obviously old and obsolete, and the counts on number of parking spaces is what it is, and they're supposed to be located on the easiest path, and sometimes that puts them all in one place, and sometimes that spreads them out.
Do you agree with Steve Bertrand that maybe we have more handicapped spots up front than we need?
No. No, sometimes they might not be located for anybody, for the handicapped people, which that's not the right word anymore, but for the people that need the help, it's not always great, and for people that don't need the help, it's annoying, but that's the way it is.
One last thing, what about the abuse of it? Do you think there's a lot of that?
There's a lot of abuse. People use their wife's card when the wife's not with them. That's not legal.
That's not cool.
They do a lot of things like that. People, you know, but you can't tell by looking at someone if they need it or not.
Yeah, well, that's the dangerous path some people do go down. I'm out of time. Thank you for your call. I appreciate your help and what you've done for your community.
Life is short and sweet, concise like a haiku.
My wife's class reunion is coming up this weekend.
I love traffic. I love the colors yellow and green. I like talk radio when they talk about things. Let's talk about things.
So I started doing sit-ups yesterday so that I'll be in my best possible shape.
Let's talk about things. Let's talk about things.
You mean so Brenda said, wait, you just started doing push-ups now?
I did. I literally did some sit-ups this week, and then the next morning I looked the same. I was so disappointed.
We talk about things, we talk about things.
I would really get people to do exercise more if when you did, the next day you could tell. Like you go for a jog, you eat right for a week. Nothing! It's like, well, what the hell? Come on.
On and on and on and on and on and.
I was really disappointed when that's the way it worked out for me. I hope you can relate. Actually, I hope you can't relate. It's 1:39. By the way, we were championing Ishnala Supper Club, one of our sponsors, and I said that it's a really nice bar and dining area, and you overlook this clear lake that's not that clear. A couple of you texted in and said, John, it's on Mirror Lake, not Clear Lake. Yeah, I guess I did not get the name right, but I meant it's advertised as this crystal clear mirror of a lake. I don't want you to be disappointed. It's a swell view. But the crystal clear waters where you can see to the bottom like they have at some lakes in the Dells, my experience was this was not that. Everything else, though, as advertised. John, Ishnala closes October 27th. My husband and I were there this past week with a couple of friends, and yes, everything was delicious. 815, Ishnala was great. Very pretty setting. Good food. Isn't that the fun?
Isn't that the truth?
Elif, I don't know if our friend Therese will call back. But this happens every time she calls in. John, what is the name of the MS drug that lady Teresa is on? My sister-in-law has MS. Thanks. I don't know. Teresa, if you want to call back, I believe it's a trial run. It's an experimental drug. I don't know if you can get it. I don't know how that works. But if I can get that information, I'll put it on the radio. And then back to handicapped stickers. Listen to this. John, I borrowed my mother's handicapped plated car. So I parked in a non-handicapped spot and took the last regular spot close by. A guy behind me screamed at me for not taking the handicapped spot, even after I would have explained to him that it wasn't my car. Good God.
So he lost the primo spot. Right.
So he can't get the good spot. He does the right thing, and then somebody yells at him. No good deed goes unpunished sometimes.
No, but I can see the other guy saying, you know, there's an open spot. Oh, the person with the handicap,
oh,
she could have parked right
there. Take
the
handicap spot. I'm telling you, in those circumstances, take the spot and limp.
So two things to fix the world, really. There would be universal redistricting of districts, congressional districts.
Right, gerrymandering.
And I just forgot what the other one was, but it would be just park and walk. You know, don't wait. Don't make people behind you wait for someone to walk to their car, to look for their keys in their pocketbook. Just drive to the next spot, park and walk.
I believe clinical studies show that people who take the first spot and walk get there quicker than the people who shark along the lanes waiting for the first available close spot. If your objective is to get in the damn store and buy some peanuts or whatever you're trying to buy, if you're buying paper towels, it would be the same thing. But if your objective is to get in as quickly as possible, just park in the nearest spot, you'll get there quicker. Now, if you don't want to walk, I understand that. But is there anything more annoying than you're walking along and boom, boom? Boom, 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 boom. You can feel the people behind you sort of stalking you in their cars. And then you go to the trunk and you go, I'm just putting this thing away and now I'm going back into the store. Oh, they're so disappointed.
Although I have to admit there have been times when I pulled behind someone and it looks like they're about to get out and then I stop. So, I mean, I'm a hypocrite because now my next complaint is, what takes you so long just to back out of the spot?
I know that. Some people then go into that slow motion thing. I'm like, why are you doing that to me?
Don't check your mirror now. Check it when you're on the interstate.
Make a phone call there. You can do that while you're driving down our nation's highways. John, employee parking lots. Listen to this. It's Chicago police stations and Chicago fire stations. Think about that. Employee parking lots at the cop shops and the fire stations are required to have handicap parking options, even though anyone that qualifies to work there is not allowed to be a policeman or fireman on full duty. So all of the good spots just sit empty every day of the year. I hope that I explained that correctly. Anyone that qualifies for the handicap sticker. If you need a handicap sticker, you can't be a firefighter or police officer. So those spots just sit there going unused. John, I'm disabled and I have a parking plaque. My biggest complaint is people that park in the lines. I'm not wheelchair bound, but I see a lot of times people park in those lines. It's hard to get in or out. And finally, Steve, you'd appreciate this. 773 says the amount of handicapped parking spots at Costco is crazy. Steve is among the people that thinks there are too many handicap spots available for those of you that desperately need them. So Dick Durbin said that we should change the laws, and he said that within 10 days, I'm reading from a piece on Slate, Friday, Senator Dick Durbin demanded that the acting commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration ban the sale of all unapproved e-cigarettes within 10 days. And this Jacob Greyer, whose piece in Slate, this piece that he writes, suggests that that would be a good idea. He said it means that overnight e-cigarette users would no longer have any vaping options. This would not stop people from using nicotine. Just as drinkers kept imbibing during Prohibition, vapers would likely return to the combustible kinds of cigarettes, you know, tobacco, that kill more than 400,000 Americans every year. Perhaps the ban would spur a few nicotine users to quit, but more likely it would force them to take their chances on the black market or go back to big tobacco. I think we all agree, even if you're a cigarette smoker, cigarettes are bad. Some of you are addicted. You wish you weren't, and it's a bad idea for anybody to start. There's that. And then I think you can make a similar sort of conversation for people that are vaping. The conversation we suggested in our little promo for the show today was, what would you rather your kids do? What would you rather them do if they had an option? They do. And they were going to choose one. You wish they wouldn't choose either. Which would you prefer they do? I don't know if that is a relevant question or not. Maybe the only answer to that is I don't want them to do either. But boy, it sure seems like a lot of them are vaping.
Well, I think it is a relevant question because that's kind of what the whole Juul is arguing, that it's a safer alternative. The FDA says they can't. But so if you have to make a choice, one or the other, because, I mean, the way it's going right now, Juul could, I mean, they looks like they're under threat. You know, their existence is under threat.
The head of Juul was on TV last week, and I don't know if I buy this. I think I've mentioned this here, Steve, but he said that if you are underage, please don't use our product. This is designed as a transition tool for regular smokers. Hearty har har, right? I mean, I think he knows full well that he gets to say this and do that, and he gets to have his cake and eat it. He doesn't really mean this, but it's the smart thing to say, I believe. But he said he has a 19-year-old and a 16-year-old, and he doesn't want them vaping or smoking. He doesn't want his kids doing this. Now, maybe your kids do. Have you been going through their drawer and you found an e-cigarette or one of those devices? I just am interested in what your thought is about your kid or your grandkid or you vaping. Better than the alternative or just as bad? I just wonder what your thoughts are. I'm not the expert on this. It's not in my world. But I think treating it as something as bad as cigarettes might somewhat miss the point. That's the purpose of this column in Slate, and something I think Senator Durbin and all of us should at least consider. Just consider it. My number is 312-981-7200. By the way, about that MS drug, it's called OCREDUS, 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 which is out of its trial, or Tysarbi, TYSARBI, also out of trial. Both are infused. So to that woman, actually, we have her information, Elif. We'll pass this along. I don't suppose people are able to write that down as quickly as I've said it. But there is that drug that one of our listeners is on, and it seems to be doing great things for her. Okay, it's 148. 312-981-7200. Call or text WGN. Back to your phone calls. Let's start with Paul. Paul, you're on WGN Radio. Hi, Paul. What did you want to say?
Hey, great to talk to you guys. Listen, having grown up in a household of smokers, you know, it was a big thing. Smoke clouded through the air.
Yeah.
So my son started doing these vaping things back in high school. It was one of these things, as a parent, you say, I wish you wouldn't do that. But there's this psychological value that says, I guess the smoke's not there, and it's like a false sense of security. But I really think that any foreign substance going into your lungs is not a good idea, period.
So
but the false sense of security, you know?
I totally get it, and it is a lure. You could see how you'd be sort of lured into that way of thinking. Well, it's better than tobacco, and so if it's just vape or blah, blah, blah. How old is your son? Does he still vape then?
16, 18, 20, and 21. So there's a little one in there, too, that he doesn't do any of that.
The other two do, though. Do they do it around you? Are they cool about that?
They're not cool. Well, they're cool about it in their own way, but one of the great things is they've never lied to us. So, therefore, we don't enable it, but they're not going to lie to us and say they're not doing it. So when they're asked directly, have they done this, it's something that's very prevalent, certainly at the 16-year-old age. My kids attend the school in LaGrange, and it's quite a problem. You know, LaGrange is really cracking down on it.
LaGrange, LT High School? Yeah, no kidding. At LT, they're, so how did they crack down on it? Did they, because in some schools, I think we had a report this week, they removed the stalls in the bathrooms, which is, I think, a terrible thing to do to somebody's privacy.
That was written badly. They removed the bathroom stall doors.
Well, yeah. I still think that's a terrible invasion of someone's privacy.
Yeah, I think it's an invasion of privacy. I think what they did is, I think it's a suspension of sorts. I think once you're caught, it's just like any other, it's classified as any other illicit, you can't buy them until you're 21.
Right.
It's just like you're being held accountable for having a pack of cigarettes.
Paul, thanks for the phone call. Thanks for the heads up on that, Steve. Joan, you're on WGN. What did you want to say, Joan? You're on the air.
Hi. What I wanted to say is, actually, my boys do not vape, but I was at an event with my 22-year-old with a bunch of his friends. You know, we were at a bar, everybody's legal drinking age, and I was shocked to see out of, you know, the 8 kids that I've known since high school, they were all vaping. They never smoked in high school. I asked them, I go, why are you vaping? And they're like, well, it's kind of cool. It relieves stress. And it's, I think if they real, and their parents don't smoke or vape. So I'm like, it's like a cool thing, even for a 22-year-old, somebody who's graduated or on the cusp of graduating from college. It's just very odd to me.
That's weird if they start that much later, right?
Exactly. I mean, they started, you know, how, maybe the last couple of years, you know, and they've never, you know, vaped in my home, but we were out, you know, having drinks, and they're all vaping. It was very odd. But my sister, who is 50 years old, started smoking at 22 and started vaping like 5 years ago, when it first started out, and she's still doing it.
Does she still do both vape and smoke tobacco?
No, she only vapes, and for 5 years she's been saying, oh, well, I'm just doing this because I'm going to quit. And then the other connection is my brother-in-law, not her husband, but another brother-in-law, is a pulmonologist. And he's like, there's not enough research to know what is happening with the lung tissue when someone is vaping.
God, that must make him crazy. I'm out of time, Joan. I really appreciate your call.
Right.
Thanks for joining us. You have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
Thinking big thoughts. So you don't have to.
These texts.
Here's John Williams.
I'll tell you, I know it's a talk show. It's not a text show, but you're texting up a storm, and you're not even the president of the United States of America. This is John. We're in the 18th story downtown studio, the Skyline Studios at WGN. I counted just 3 buildings over from the Vista Towers. Which, according to the engineer that's part of the design team on them, the construction team we had on yesterday, will make it the second highest, tallest building in Chicago, at least the second tallest habitable space in the city of Chicago. Elif just whispered in my ear, he said third. Was it third? I thought it was second. Third, says Elif? Okay. But, I mean, you think Trump, Aon, Sears, and Hancock, those are the big four in Chicago. This one will be right in the middle then of the tallest habitable spaces. And then you get into all sorts of arguments about what if it's not a habitable space, but there's just a floor there and there's a viewing deck? Or what if there's a spire? And then there's different kinds of spires, those that are antennas for broadcast and those that are part of the construction of the building itself. So everybody gets to brag about who's taller or second highest, etc. But I suppose living space is a pretty good measure of how tall a building is. So I was looking at the thing when I was walking to work today, and it's a very wavy, this Genie Gang building, it'd be her second in the city, it's a very wavy building.
Didn't she do the one right behind us?
Right. So she's got this little community here of really far-out-looking, beautiful buildings. And it's on the south side of the Chicago River. If you come downtown and you want to see this interesting space, which you will eventually be able to walk through as a passerby on your way to even Millennium Park, say.
There's a point when you're driving down, I think it's the Edens, maybe it's the Kennedy, but I think it's the Edens, where you're driving directly at it.
Oh, no kidding. You can see it up there.
Right. So
wow.
if you're driving in Chicago and you see this building under construction you're driving right at, that's Vista Tower.
Be just, it'd be almost adjacent from that vantage point, I suppose, to the lake. Because then there's just two or three buildings between it and Lakeshore Drive and the water. So it really is this beautiful vantage point. And it's three towers that are sort of stuck together, different heights, waving up into the sky like waves across the landscape there. And one of those people is going to have the rooftop patio to themselves with an infinity pool. So imagine that, say 70 stories up, and you know how those infinity pools, like you're going to go right over the edge. There's no way I'm getting my wife to swim over. I say, hey, Brenda, I'll have a cocktail here. You come over and swim over here, and we'll just hang out by the... She's not going over there. That is not happening.
They got the heebie-jeebies just thinking of that.
An infinity pool, 70 stories up. Whoa! I mentioned earlier today, you were kind of criticizing my attire, Steve, because I've just got blue jeans on, a T-shirt, and a baseball cap on my head.
I wasn't criticizing it. It's just very out of character for you.
The reason was because we were zhuzhing my son's apartment. Zhuzh is a verb, and it means to gussy up, I believe.
Were the carpets stripped? The billion-year-old carpets?
No, the billion-year-old carpets are still there. So we've put a rug down on top of the old dirty rugs to make that look a little, here's what zhuzhing is. And I think I don't know if there's a TV producer listening in town right now, but I'm telling you, my wife Brenda could do this TV show. Take stuff that you already have and make it look better. That's the essence of zhuzhing. Like, you don't go and buy a bunch of expensive stuff. And you could go to a craft show or something and buy some junky things and make them look cool when they bring them in. So there's that. But it's also just taking the stuff you have and going, if you put that chair there, and then we'll hang this thing here and put a plant there, and da-da-da, and the next thing you know, the place pops. And I really think it's a singular talent. It's almost an artistic sense. And Brenda's really good at that. If anybody needs... She doesn't know I'm hiring her out. But I'm telling you, it could be one of those TV shows. It would be the opposite of Windy City Rehab, where that crazy lady takes really expensive houses, makes them insanely more expensive, and then you can't sell them and you didn't pull the right permits. That's one kind of show. This would be the opposite of that. It would be, let's kind of on the down low, take what you got and just make it better. That could be a show too.
So I used to be Griffin's roommate, as you know, and there was a chair there, a leather chair. Was it given a purpose today?
Things were moved around.
Okay.
Things were moved around.
Because it was just sitting against a window.
And I've got it. Well, that's it. So a lot of, I don't know anything about this. This is not my field. But my observation is that a lot of, especially for young people who are sharing spaces in their apartments or their first condos, a lot of stuff doesn't function right or reflect who they are. It's like, where's your personality? What are your interests? Oh, well, you do have this thing? Well, let's feature it. How can we do that? That's zhuzhing. By the way, one other thing that we have as a special talent here at WGN Radio on this show is Steve Bertrand's travel. I want to mention that Steve's trip to Ireland still has some available spaces.
My trip, you're talking to me?
Yeah.
No, we're leaving for Ireland on Friday. We're sold out.
Oh, what's the one that has available spaces?
Next May, we're going to go to Madrid and up to Paris through the Basque region.
Oh.
Very nice. I've always wanted to see the Basque region of Spain, San Sebastian. So we'll eat. It's known for its food and everything. So we'll eat there for a couple of days, then go on to Bordeaux.
Yeah.
And visit the winery and some winery estates. And the area is known for oysters, too. Did you know? I didn't know that.
I did not know that.
So we'll go on a little oyster boat. Lots of cool stuff.
So you start in Paris?
Start in Madrid for two nights, and then we'll go up to the Basque area. We'll go to Bilbao, to the Guggenheim Museum, the Prado Museum in Madrid, but mostly it's about food and tasting wines and things like that. From two nights in St. Sebastian, two nights in Bordeaux, then we board the fast train, two nights in Paris.
Oh, no kidding. You take the fast train.
Yes, we do, my
love
friend.
Love that fast train. So, I took a different fast train, but those fast trains are fun.
I've wanted to go on this trip for years because remember the Basque separatists in the 70s? I've always been interested by that area, and I've kind of wanted to check it out. So it just coincides with great food, too.
So how do people find out about this?
So we leave May 1st, and we're about halfway filled already. We just announced it last week, but leave May 1st. You can see information at stevebertrandtravel.com. You can email me, steve@stevebertrandtravel.com, or just call me, 847-606-6065.
I think the easiest way is that email or the website. What's the website again?
stevebertrandtravel.com. It's also up at wgnradio.com. You can find it. But it's $4,800, and it's 10 days.
$48. Now, that's a deal.
Whoops.
$4,800. That's a deal, too.
So I'll put you down for two?
You could. It's 218 on WGN. We were talking about vaping a little while ago. Thanks for that, Steve. Good luck. The trips are always good with Steve. 815 said about vaping, John, I believe we as humans are not as smart as we think. I can see time passing. And long-term studies finding that vaping is far worse than cigarettes. We have no idea the long-term effects. Same way we had no idea about cigarettes originally. And 847 said, listen to this, schools can't win. It would be risky to have staff in the bathrooms all the time. My high school boys say the clouds of vaping fill the bathrooms every day. They even had to turn on the lights at a dance to keep the kids from vaping during the dance. 847 said, I smoked cigarettes for 40-plus years, decided to quit. I started vaping instead, but I ordered the liquid with no nicotine in it. I don't know you can do that, because that's the thing that hooks you, right? John, if it wasn't for the vapes, I'd still be smoking cigarettes. Since I'm now nicotine-free, I've actually lessened the amount I vape as well. Do you remember we had Cheryl, the she shed lady from the State Farm commercials, on?
Yeah.
Wasn't she delightful? She was on the stream with us last Thursday, and then we played that interview back again on Saturday on the radio side because she was so fun. She's from Englewood. She went to Morgan Park High School, then eventually the University of Iowa, and then to L.A. to strike out as an actress. It didn't happen for her. She found a job in the corporate world, got frustrated with that, and finally said, if I'm going to pay high rent out here, I have to give it a shot. She quit her corporate job. Went back to acting school. 2 years later, she got her first gig on a commercial. And since then, she's appeared in bit parts on all of the major TV shows that you know. And she's been doing some commercials as well. She was on that State Farm commercial where the husband and wife are standing on the lawn and Cheryl's she shed's on fire. Well, someone finally burned down my she shed. No one burned down your she shed, Cheryl. Your she shed was struck by lightning, that commercial. She was just so much fun.
I just thought of the American Gothic painting.
Yeah, that's him and her.
That might be a stretch, though, because she's actually talking and has a smile on her face.
And in the American Gothic, they're not. But there they are, two flat-faced, thunderstruck, you know, looking at the fire. The chandelier crashes down. That commercial has a second life, let me tell you. Somebody, anyway, sent this in. 815, John, I was at the track over the weekend. I saw this name and I thought of your show. And then it shows the racing form, the horses you can bet on. I guess they were at Arlington. And the 5 slot was My Windy Lolita. And the 6 slot was Fig Fin Buster. That was the name of the horse. Another horse, KB's Whoopee. That's what they name horses. But in the 7 slot, Green and White Jersey, was TJ She Shed Cheryl. She Shed Cheryl was the name of one of the horses at Arlington the other day.
Nice.
I don't know how She Shed did, but how about that? It's 2:20. We said we were going to connect some of the dots in Trump land. We'll do so with a reporter from the Washington Post. But before we get to all of that, let me just sort of set the framework for you after this. 269 said, how much money does a trip like that cost and what amount of spending are you taking with you, Steve Bertrand?
Well, I mean, the $4,800 covers flights and hotel and
that
several...
That includes airfare.
Yeah, dinners and lunches. So you just have a few meals to pay for on your own and souvenirs for your friends and family.
How much money do you take?
I usually take, I got my money for Ireland yesterday's. I usually take about $100 worth of the current or the local currency. And then you can use ATMs all over Europe, and credit cards are used more there than they are here.
Yeah, the credit card's very easy. And right. The ATMs are also, I remember the first time I used an ATM in a foreign country, and I was just kind of very intimidated by the process. And you can figure it out. Usually there's an English window anyway, so it's not hard.
Just like here you go. There are all different languages you can choose. You can choose English
exactly,
there.
Exactly.
But, you know, they're going cashless much more quickly than we are, so credit cards are fine.
708, if the she shed was struck by lightning, what would part two be about? There are no loose ends to tie up. Not everybody believes that Cheryl Shehshed was struck by lightning. Her husband is saying that, and some people think he had something to do with it. I'm not making this up. John, I quit smoking, using vapes, using less and less nicotine, and now I'm off vapes. The e-cigarettes were the way I quit smoking. John, why is no one talking about Trump sending text to the wrong person, the same person, or the person with the same name, but the recipient in this case was a pastor? Just one of Trump's mistakes. We're not talking about that today. John, my husband and I went to Ishnala for our first anniversary. Next May will be our 30th. Maybe we'll go back. It was lovely. Ishnala's getting a lot of free love on this radio station. I hope they appreciate that. There was a couple of others that I just wanted to mention here. Maybe this is one of them. John, what bothers me is they want to ban e-cigarettes because of a few people dying. But yet regular cigarettes have killed thousands of people and cost a lot of money in medical bills and insurance costs. Those should be banned rather than cracking down on e-cigarettes. And finally, 630 texted in and said, hey, John, I know that you sometimes have authors on. Please, please, please have Marie Forleo on. She's doing a book signing in Naperville Monday, September 16th. Thank you. Steve, do you know who Marie Forleo is? I don't.
I don't know if it's Fiorino.
No, it's F. Will, unless they misspelled it.
I don't know.
Producer Aleph, who's Marie Forleo, please?
She wrote a book, John.
Thank you. She's doing a book signing in Naperville Monday, September 16th. You don't happen to have the title, do you?
Everything is figure-out-able.
Everything is figure-outable.
There's an American life coach named Marie Forleo.
Oh.
I think it's probably Forleo, though.
Still, a life coach?
Everything is figure-outable.
Okay, so that would be a book that a life coach would write. But what do we think about life coaches? Don't we think that's the sort of thing any of us could do? A life coach is somebody who just tells you to be a better version of yourself, right?
Sometimes you need someone to tell you that.
Really?
Isn't it a mix of therapy, mental health, and like some sort of hands-on training?
Okay.
I have a couple of friends who've gone through a lot of training to be life coaches.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I think they
could help you.
And I guess I am judging a little bit, but mostly because I'm ignorant, Steve. So there's real value in that, huh?
Well, I mean, I know they go through a lot of training. I know it's a serious thing. So
I have some in-laws that didn't
understand it, but yeah.
I think a lot of you have in-laws that didn't go through any training, and they're very good at this. You know, you should do that. Well, why don't you do that? I think you should really do this.
You mean Lou?
You're feeling that ice cold, forgetting the good things.
Hey!
Caught up in the problems. Please stop complaining. Tell me something beautiful. Lovelier than you.
This is fun. I like this, Ella.
Me too. So,
that's
a pause in the
you wonder
song.
Why that paused. That was in the song. What are you listening to?
Well, I asked you earlier if you recognized that woman's voice.
I said no.
Vocalist. You said no. But she's our friend Kimbra.
Ah, Kimbra.
We had her in the studio last year, and she's a musical genius. This is a new song that she was featured on with the artist Half Alive.
She's delightful. Really pretty, really interesting look, really great sound.
And stylish.
Just a, I know, really stylish and a really good guest.
Really awesome.
Kimbra.
High energy.
This is new for her, this song?
Yeah.
238 on WGN. I'm John Williams, producer Aleph, with the music mix for you. Okay, so I just wanted to mention a couple of details here as we now go to Aaron Blake, the Washington Post reporter who has joined us before. He is a senior political reporter there. As you know, tomorrow is the anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. This weekend, the president had hoped to secretly meet at Camp David with the group behind those attacks. Time magazine and others are reporting that Vice President Mike Pence, John Bolton, and others advised the president against meeting the Taliban there at Camp David. Fox News says David Petraeus and Lindsey Graham also advised against the meeting. But this is the place where Jimmy Carter got Israel to meet with Egypt. And the president did promise as a candidate to draw down our troops in Afghanistan, getting us from 14,000 to even 8,000 troops is turning out to be harder than he promised. Condoleezza Rice was on CBS this morning, and she said the reliability of the Taliban at the negotiation table was troubled from the get-go. And whatever the numbers are of troops that we have or should have there, she said it's not always bad policy for Americans to be stationed around the world after wars for stabilization. We were in Germany, she reminded everybody, for 45 years after World War II until the wall fell there, and we've helped maintain the peace in the Korean Peninsula since 1953. But the final details of this summit with the Taliban and the president of Afghanistan could not be worked out, and when a car bomb in Afghanistan killed a dozen people, including an American serviceman, the president canceled the meeting, saying, "What kind of people would do something like this?" And my answer to that was, well, the kind of people that will kill 3,000 innocent people on 9/11. It's widely suspected that the explosion gave the president a convenient reason to back away from the talks, that either were going to fail or not happen at all. It makes me also wonder, since generally nobody knew about these talks in the first place, why did he tell us about them being canceled? Shouldn't he have, or could not he have, maybe avoided some of the embarrassment or controversy or anger, or who knows what the fallout will be from the Taliban if he had simply said nothing about it at all? And then Bolton's out. Aaron Blake joins us now on WGN Radio to fill in some of the blanks. At least that's how I run up to this thing. Aaron, did I miss anything in my little summary?
Yeah, I think we're all asking ourselves why this was disclosed in the first place, certainly. Also asking ourselves whether this was something that really anybody in the White House, apart from the president, was pushing for. I think that there is a sense, certainly, that people like Bolton and Pence were opposed to it. My big question is, how much is the likes of Secretary of State Mike Pompeo pushing for these kinds of things? Certainly, Bolton's exit is a boon to Pompeo, but with Pompeo, you never know how much of his status right now is him actually getting things that he wants, and how much of it he's actually just kind of going along with what the president wants, because he's certainly been willing to do the things that the president wants more than other aides, and that's one of the reasons why he's one of the longest serving members of the president's cabinet.
And maybe one of the reasons Bolton is out. I mean, was it inevitable that Bolton wasn't going to maybe last until the end of the term or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, this was not a marriage made in heaven, and everybody knew that from the moment that the president hired him. You know, if you were to look up the definition of a Republican foreign policy hawk in the dictionary, John Bolton is really the first person you'd think of in that context. And President Trump, of course, ran as mostly a non-interventionist. He's governed largely in that way. He's wanted to negotiate with the North Korean leader, has talked about doing that with Iran, planned to do that with the Taliban. All of this is anathema to pretty much everything John Bolton has been talking about for many years now. And so we all kind of knew that this was going to come to a head one way or another. And it seems like that has ultimately become the case, particularly on this Afghanistan issue, where the president wasn't just ignoring what John Bolton was saying, but was also basically sidelining him and not allowing him to be a part of this process, which is what we're reporting is really what precipitated this difficult relationship finally coming to an end.
Well, was the timing of it the worst? I mean, let's forget about Bolton for a second, although this may have been part of his objection. He was actually just more of a hawk, as you said. But I mean, Was the timing of it what maybe was driving Pence and some of the others to advise against meeting with the Taliban at Camp David?
You mean as far as it being the 18th anniversary of 9/11?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's when I first read this story, you know, it made me wonder, you know, that's a big part of maybe making me wonder who actually is pushing for this besides the president. If you are going to hold these kinds of meetings, the idea that you would do it so close to the anniversary of 9/11, I think, is a very questionable political decision. You know, even if you can argue that this is a good opportunity to talk about how long we've been there and things like that, I think that was just a very questionable bit of timing for everybody involved. And you know, maybe that's part of the reason why this was kind of a last straw for Bolton. If you look at what he's been tweeting about over the last 18 hours or so, he's got a couple of 9/11 tweets, which we've now learned at least one of them came after the president and him talked about resigning. So the fact that he's raising up that issue even as his time is coming to an end, I think, is pretty suggestive of the reasons behind this.
Well, I can make the president's argument, right? I mean, imagine the coup and the coup for peace it would have been if on the anniversary of 9/11, he was able to say the troops are coming home. I mean, that was what he campaigned on. So I don't, you know, I this is one instance where I'm very troubled by some of the details, but I think I do see a logical train of thought here, right?
Yeah, I think that's certainly an argument that he could make. But you know, even if they do hold the talks, the idea that they're going to reach some kind of ironclad agreement, you know, after one meeting, I think is a little bit difficult to say. You know, as we've seen with North Korea, these kinds of negotiations tend to be dragged out over time. There are many complex issues involved. And so, you know, the idea that this was going to be solved with one meeting, whether it was secret or not, I think was a really difficult gambit for them to enter into.
Well, the timing notwithstanding, just follow me for a second here. He said he was going to get the troops home. He was going to do better than Obama did. We've got 14,000 there. The target was 8,000, maybe 5,000 they wanted to get down to. And better that we negotiate with our enemies than we fight them. So let's get these people together. Timing notwithstanding, was it such a crazy idea for the president to try and pull this off?
I don't think so, relative to where we were politically a few years ago. I think if there's one thing the president has changed about our politics, it's that the Republican Party especially has warmed to the idea of negotiating with people. Remember back during the 2008 race, many Republicans, and I would add even Hillary Clinton, derided President Obama, then candidate Obama, for talking about how he would meet with the leaders of Iran without any preconditions. Well, just a couple hours ago in the White House, we had the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, say that the president, now President Trump, would in fact meet with Iran without preconditions. And it's not really much of a story anymore. So, you know, I think that everybody's kind of waiting to see what ultimately results from these talks. People are cautiously optimistic. Many people are. But we're also seeing the flip side of that with North Korea, which is the idea that perhaps we're just being strung along and that the negotiations themselves are being used by foreign powers to legitimize themselves on the world stage, which was always the risk of this kind of thing in the first place.
Yeah. Well, that just, you know, I try not to go here, Aaron, but every now and then I can't help but wonder, imagine if this was Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton that was going to meet with the Taliban on the anniversary virtually of 9/11. And would Fox News or the Republicans who so love the American flag and the idea of America first, how would they have handled that? I don't hear much pushback. I was literally looking on the Fox News site today and they didn't seem to be as interested in this topic as I'll bet they would have been if this was Hillary or Barack.
I don't think that there's any question that the reaction would be different. And I've thought about that about many, you know, occurrences during the Trump presidency. Certainly there are plenty of double standards in politics to go around. But I think this particular instance is maybe the best encapsulation of how that reaction would be significantly different.
Well, it's funny you say encapsulation, because some people are saying, if I can just segue to a slightly different topic here for a minute with you, some people say that Sharpiegate is the perfect encapsulation of the president, because it's a self-inflicted wound. It's him punching back harder than is necessary. At the end of the day, all he was trying to do was warn Alabama. He had bad information, or maybe he knew it was bad, but he just wanted to be the guy who was warning people and letting everybody know he was there to protect him. He was the president. He loves that role. He loves putting on the USA hat and sitting at a conference table and projecting that he's the protector in chief. So at the end of the day, the only thing he screwed up was he had bad information. But talk about a perfect summary of this presidency. It's not the crime, it's the lie about the crimes that gets you in trouble. And if I understand correctly, the National Weather Service in Birmingham put out a message 20 minutes after, on September 1st, he warned America that Alabama could get hit, and the National Weather Service said that's not going to happen. And then long after the hurricane leaves, NOAA, the parent organization for the Weather Service, said, well, actually, the president was operating with some legitimate information. And as soon as I heard that, I thought, I'll bet somebody in the administration got in NOAA's ear. And lo and behold, they report to the Commerce Department, and you guys are reporting that the Commerce Secretary is now being looked at for pushing this notion.
Yeah, it's really a great little microcosm of kind of a small piece of information that probably isn't that significant in the scheme of things. I mean, it would have been, if the president had said somebody was safe and they were actually in danger, that would actually be pretty dangerous. But as the reverse of that, he was saying people that were safe were actually in danger. So there wasn't risk of people, you know, having a false sense of security or something like that.
Right.
And then it's just kind of been drawn out over the course of the last week plus here. And then when you start talking about pressure potentially being applied on government agencies that generally don't engage in partisan political issues, that's a whole different thing, and that's where things start to get more problematic. So we're all still reporting this out, trying to figure out whether the White House was involved in this. Certainly there have been times when these kinds of agencies have simply felt like they needed to toe the line. Other times there has been more of a direct actual effort to get them to toe that line, but this is something that has turned into be something rather serious, when in the first case it wasn't all that serious to begin with.
Right, because what's serious is trust. I mean, imagine it was something other than a hurricane that actually didn't hurt anybody in the United States of America. Bahamas devastated. But I mean, imagine if it was something more serious to Americans than that. You can't trust these people about frivolous stuff like a weather map, let alone something that really would be more consequential. I mean, I know that's obvious, but isn't that the most important takeaway?
Yeah, and that's why we're seeing the reaction from certain elements of the NOAA and the National Weather Service talking about how important this is. The chief scientist from NOAA, we reported yesterday, is looking into this, is investigating what happened here. He said that this was dangerous because it does cut into the idea that these weather services can be trusted. And that they're not being politicized. So I think there are a lot of people in that industry, especially, who feel very strongly that this was over the line, and they want to see some accountability for that. And I would add, the head of NOAA spoke earlier today at the annual meeting of the National Weather Service, which just by sheer coincidence happens to be in Alabama. Yeah. And he didn't really back away from that statement. He kind of offered a very kind of middle ground comment on that. So I would be I'm watching to see how the meteorological community and other people at NOAA and NWS are going to respond to that, because he didn't exactly stand by them in the way they probably would have hoped he did.
So now you're confused. As an American, should I trust the Weather Service, NOAA, the president? Where am I to go? And my advice to the president, and I don't think he's listening, but were he to be, I would say, we'll figure it out. Let the weather people do the weather. And even though your intentions are good, don't even go there. Let them handle this. Aaron Blake is a senior political reporter for The Washington Post. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Aaron. Keep doing what you guys do over there.
I'll try. Thank you very much.
Lots of texts to the show today and yesterday like this one. John, I quit smoking in 2010. We've been talking about vaping. Senator Durbin wants in 10 days the FDA to make illegal at least some versions of the e-cigarettes. John, I also quit smoking in 2010 after 40 years. I used e-cigarettes for the fidget factor, not so much for the nicotine. The last 3 months, I bought nicotine-free e-cigarettes, and then I finally quit everything. Some of you are using it that way, but a lot of you are also telling us that your teenagers who don't smoke vape left and right. Teddy Saves America is our new Teddy Roosevelt show. It's going to take place October 12th, 10:30 in the morning, Elgin Community College Blizzard Theater. Did you get your tickets yet? Here's the number to call. Write this down. Ready? 847-622-0300. Call 847-622-0300. Or just go to WGNradio.com/Teddy. Watch me and Teddy Roosevelt on stage. You ask questions, you learn, you laugh, you live better when you see the president. Who's that clicking away on the keyboard?
Sorry, it was my clicking, picking up there. I apologize. I was just checking in with you, John, because I want to tell you what's coming up on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. We've got Ben Bradley from WGN-TV.
Yeah.
He'll be checking in with us, some local news, what they're covering over in the newsroom on Bradley Place. Congressman Kinzinger will be talking with us as well. Remember, he got into a bit of a spat with the president over the weekend. Of course, that was like 10 spats ago, but still very interesting.
That is so...
Isn't that in the rearview mirror now?
Oh, my gosh.
But it has to do with Afghanistan, so very relevant.
Oh,
and
yeah.
His views on the Bolton situation as well. So Adam Kinzinger will be with us. And we've also... This will be very interesting, I think. If you live in the suburbs and you work in the city... There are real legs now to this whole commuter tax. How much would it be? How would it be implemented? Could they use existing technology like red light cameras to enforce it? What's going to happen next? And we're going to talk to Crane Chicago Business.
I'm so glad you're talking about that. I was meaning to bring that up last weekend myself. And I don't know how we're going to do that. They do this in London. If you drive into the city, they pick your license plate or it's a transponder, but you get charged.
You get dinged.
Comes in this, and it's expensive.
And there it's like $15 or $20. I can't remember, depending on the time.
Every time you come into town.
Every time. Stockholm does it. Singapore does it. And next year, New York is going to be doing it as well. I don't think they've determined their prices yet. And certainly this is still kind of new here. But it's front and center in terms of the items of consideration to solve the city's budget woes. So
and
we'll
Lori's
be
behind
that.
This, right? Mayor Lightfoot?
It sounds like she's really in the second and third stages now of just figuring out how this might work. How would you do it? And it is a real consideration. So Cranes is going to break down that piece of it for us if we should expect that to be happening anytime soon.
Hooray, I'll be listening.
Thank you, John.